Good afternoon and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, brought to you from the Walnut Creek Marriott. I am Joanne Perilli, a justice on the California Court of Appeal and a member of the Board of Governors of the Commonwealth Club. I will be your chair for today. Today's meeting is co-sponsored by the Lafayette Bookstore. We also welcome our radio audience and invite everyone to visit us on the web at www.commonwealthclub.org. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our guest speaker. Susie Orman is the author of The Courage to Be Rich, which debuted in the number one spot on the New York Times bestseller list in 1999, after just 1 week on sale. With close to a million copies in print today, it has made bestseller lists with USA Today, Business Week, The Wall Street Journal, and many other newspapers around the country. Perhaps no one should have been surprised, given the success of Ms. Orman's 1997 bestseller, The 9 Steps to Financial Freedom. This book also has been on bestseller lists around the country and was on the New York Times bestseller list for over 11 months. Each of these books was featured as a PBS special, co-produced and hosted by Ms. Orman, and each was one of the most successful fundraisers PBS has had. She currently appears on her own show, Financial Freedom, on the QVC station, and is a regular contributor to NBC News Today. Today we will meet this financial guru and learn how and why we have come to listen to her on advice for gaining control not simply over money, but over our very relationship to it. Her message seems pretty simple. You can have anything in life that you want, as long as you can afford it. And the way you get to afford it, according to Ms. Orman, is by respecting your money, as though it were a living entity, so that it will think and care about you in return. Ms. Orman grew up in South Chicago, but moved west to make her fortune. She worked at the Buttercup Bakery on College Avenue in Berkeley. And here I'll resist any temptation to assume she learned about making dough there, because she only made $400 a month. But she became a broker at Merrill Lynch in the early 1980s, making more than $100,000 a year. She directed the Susie Orman Financial Group for 10 years. She is a certified financial planner, and she has worked both with Prudential Beach and Merrill Lynch. She has personally experienced the highs and lows of financial success and disappointments, as when an assistant took all her client base and left her without the means of continuing in her trade, and speaks with the joy of one who doesn't worship money, but values it like a good friend. Her combination of old-world frugality and New Age spirituality has enabled Ms. Orman to feel perfectly comfortable telling us to trust our inner voices when investing. Her enthusiasm about her topic is contagious, and she has been described in one magazine this way. You don't meet Susie Orman, you join her in progress. So it is with great delight that we join her in progress now, and welcome Ms. Susie Orman to the Commonwealth Club.
That was lovely, was it not? Well, can you imagine? Here you are, you're sitting there and you're hearing people talk about you. And it's interesting when you see your life kind of flashing in front of you in those first few minutes and to realize, I did all that pretty good. So, you know, it's something for me to look out and see all of you. You've come here tonight to hear about money. Think about that. Years ago, you probably wouldn't have shown up to hear about money, probably wouldn't have been as interested in it as you are now. And so I'm so glad that you're here, because I have to tell you this. There's not one of you in this room, there's not one of you listening to this program, where money doesn't touch you. It touches you regardless of your sex, your age, your religion. It touches you in every way possible. I want to start this talk by saying that I would be the last person in this world to ever tell you that money alone would ever make you happy, for it will not. But I'll be the absolute first to tell you that lack of money sure will make you miserable. And the older you get, the more miserable it will make you if you do not have it. As I look out into this room, I see people of all ages, and I see people of all income brackets as well. Those who obviously have money, and those who want to have it very badly. So what's the difference between the two of you? Why do some of you have that which you wanted? Why do some of you not have that which you think you deserve? I have asked and wondered that question for absolutely an eternity when I was working with people and their money. And I have to tell you, I came up with the one key element that distinguishes us all when it comes to money. And that's this: how you think and you feel about money are the absolute key determining factors that will determine how much you have and ultimately get to keep. If you don't like money, if you disrespect money, if you think you should never have money, I got news for you. You never, ever will. If you don't have that which you want in your life today, and you're wondering why not, I have to tell you, look in the mirror. You are the obstacles to your own wealth, nobody else. There are many, many laws of money, for money is governed by laws. And one of the key laws of money is this: your thoughts create your destiny. It's said to be very, very careful about what you think, because what you think you will eventually say. Be very careful of the words you use, because your words will become your actions. Be careful about what you do, because your actions will become your habits, and your habits will become your destiny. The key to have a life of financial freedom is when your thoughts, your words, and your actions are one. It is not enough for you to stand out there and think, oh, I want to be financially free, yet say, I'm never going to be able to pay my credit card bills. It's not enough to think and say you want to be financially free, yet do absolutely nothing to make that come true, where your actions are nothing more than, I want some more. It's gotta be more than that. And each and every one of you has what it takes if you're simply willing to turn towards your money like a friend rather than push it away like an enemy, where most of you treat your money. You work, many of you, 40 to 60 hours a week to earn it, do you not? How many of you spend truthfully more than 1 or 2 hours an entire year to learn about it? You know, I have to tell you, I'm speaking, obviously, for the Commonwealth Club. Whenever I speak for a group, I like to play with the name of the organization that I'm speaking for. And if you were to look at the words and reverse them, what you would see is this is a club where we want wealth for the common person. We want wealth to be a common factor in each and every one of our lives that link us together. For when you do have money in your life, when you don't have to worry about where your next paycheck is going to come from or what are you going to do if you lose your job, you have a sense of freedom about who you are. And when you have a sense of freedom about who you are, what you are able to create is absolutely beyond your wildest dreams. The other day, I happened to be in Southern California, and I was giving a talk to a very affluent school there. And all of a sudden, I realized that something is horrible is going on in our culture today and in our society. And it has to do with our children and the wealth that each and every one of us is passing down to our own kids. I was at this school where the tuition was more than what the teachers who teach our children were being paid. What is wrong with that picture? Then I started to do some research, and I realized that the teachers that are in our school systems, that we trust our children to, 5 days a week, almost 8 hours a day, are of the lowest paid employees in the United States. When you don't have enough money to pay the bills, when you are living in constant fear of not having enough, you render yourself powerless because you are afraid. Do you think that when those teachers stand up there in front of your children, that they're passing down a message of power to them? They may be teaching them about the facts in the books, about how to add, about history. But are they teaching them a silent message of less? Because are they teaching them in their own way, as the kids are looking at these people saying, I am afraid because I don't have enough money. So therefore, after I leave you today as a teacher, I have to go and get another job just to pay my bills. There is so much happening out there, especially not only with you, but with your children. I ask you to have this Commonwealth Club, to have the wealth passed down to everybody as a club, to start including your children as well. And where you have to include them, since your teachers can't give that power to them, is in your own homes. Are you powerful in your own homes when it comes to money? Are you? There are many women in this room. Are you? Or are you like most women who, even though you may be paying the bills, you may be doing things with money, it is your male counterpart who has truly been taking care of that money for you? If that is your situation, I have to tell you, you are making one of the biggest mistakes out there. First of all, actuarially speaking, men die before women do. Now, ladies, I don't know if it's because we're killing them off or what we're doing. But the truth is, we're going to go on many, many years after they have gone. And the time to start learning about your money is not when you have suffered the loss of your mate. At that point in time, you may be, depending on your relationship, but you most likely will be an emotional wreck. That is not the time to also become a financial wreck as well, because you don't know what to do with money. One thing about men, and I don't mean to insult the men that are listening or in this room, but if you think most of them know what they're doing with money, you are wrong. Absolutely wrong. The problem is, we have placed this tremendous burden on their shoulders where we have said, please take care of us. And they love you so much that they say, okay, I will. And then who do they have to go ask for help? Joe, the next door neighbor? Jim, three doors down? Ladies, they won't even ask for directions. You know? So all of a sudden, they find out that maybe they're doing something wrong and they don't know how to correct it. I ask you each now to join forces with your money. For those of you who aren't learning how to invest with it yet or what to do with it, now is the time to do that. Men teach the women. Women teach the men. Be a true partnership when it comes to money, what you have and what you don't have. The topic of money is so vital today that even my little 85-year-old mama, who calls me all the time and says, Susie, I bought AOL. What do you think? I said, Ma, where'd you learn about that? She goes, I'm watching, Susie. I know what to do. And then she yells at me when it goes down because then she says, why'd you tell me to buy that? I go, but Ma, I didn't. But even Mama is calling me and saying, I'm investing. And as much as we think there is money out there, do you know that over 50% of the United States has less than $1,000 as a net worth? Do you know that over 53% of the workers in the United States make $18,000 a year or less? How does that affect you? It does. It affects you because when there are people out there that don't have a lot of money and that are struggling and that don't necessarily have what it takes, therefore, because they are struggling to pass the correct messages down to their children, those are the children that somehow end up somehow corrupting your children and other things cross barriers when you least expect it. So money is a vital topic today, especially because the markets are going crazy. In the short period of time today, I don't really have what it takes or the allotment to tell you about all my theories of money, about all the laws of money, about everything that I'd really like you to know. But there's one thing that I have no doubt all of you want to know, and that's what's happening with these stock markets. I have to tell you, if you think that there is an expert out there that knows, you are so wrong, I can't even begin to tell you. However, why it should be surprising you that these markets are going down is truthfully beyond me. We have been living in a fantasy world when it comes to these markets, when you have the NASDAQ stock market, which for those of you who don't know, happens to be an indicator made up mainly of technology stocks, was up 85% last year. So what if it's down 27% from its high of March 10th this year? Most of you are still up, unless you bought at the wrong time. Did fear govern you? Is fear what made you jump into the market after watching it for the past 10 years go up and up and up? It's true, isn't it? And you thought, oh, it's going to go down next year. 3 years later, you're saying, it's going to go down next year. 10 years later, you're finally saying, forget it, I am not going to battle it anymore. And then just 3 weeks ago, you jump in the market, you buy everything you can, and now it goes down. I actually have a friend, we call her Wrong Way Linda, and I can say this because she's in New York. Sure enough, 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, she called up her financial advisor, who's a friend of mine, because then John called me and said, do you know what Linda wants to do? She wanted to sell every conservative stock she had, we're talking millions of dollars, and put it in biotech. We knew at that time that we should start putting every penny we had into conservative stocks and sell our biotech. Sure enough, it's exactly what happened. The reason that I can tell you I think these markets will turn soon is Linda sold all her biotech stocks yesterday. That's the God honest truth. So we'll see what happens here, just to see if maybe Wrong Way Linda can show you what to do as well. However, this is what I think. The key to successful investing today is diversification. If you are not diversified, you are truly, truly asking for trouble. What kind of diversification should you have? In a portfolio, in my opinion right now, you should not have more than 29%, 30% at most, of your portfolio in technology stocks. Before we started right now, a woman came up to me in the back of the room. Obviously, she's retired. And she says to me, what should I do? I have a lot of my money in the market. I said, well, how much of your money is in technology? She said, about 90%. Right? And that's true. Is that what you have? A year ago, 2 years ago, that would have been absolutely fine. That is no longer fine today. Today, you have reality striking. You have an economy that Alan Greenspan has declared war on. Alan Greenspan has said, and we haven't wanted to listen, that he's going to continue to raise interest rates until this market does not go up. Do you know that almost 1 month ago, as I was standing in front of a group of people giving a talk, I was saying to them, well, here we are, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 15%, but the NASDAQ is up 22%. Today, where those stats are, is the NASDAQ is down 10% and the Dow Jones is down 5%. Alan Greenspan said he was going to essentially declare war because he did not want the stock market to go up more than 6% this year, because he wanted people to stop spending money they didn't have. How does that affect you? It affects you in two ways. Now that people no longer have this perceived notion of wealth, because everybody is freaking out because they are down considerably in their portfolios, they then, therefore, will stop spending money and buying houses that are totally out of sight.
Thank you, God.
There we go. Interest rates have gone up. So we no longer, when you take out a mortgage, are able to get a 15 or a 30-year mortgage for 6.5% or 6.75%. Now you're in the 8% range. What that does to you is it affects the prices of housing sooner than later. You're going to see that happen. So in my opinion, if you're going to sell and you want the top price right now, now is the time to sell. Because I think as you see us progress and that the ripple effect of his raising interest rates continue down through the system, as the people who have seen their fortunes diminish from these dot-com companies, which is right here in the Bay Area, it has to affect real estate. Why have things been going so great lately? I'll tell you why. A lot of people, because of computers, have also gotten their tax refunds earlier than ever before. Do you know that $92 billion, that's with a B, of tax refunds came in the first few months, January and February, of the year 2000? Do you know that the average refund is about $1,800, actually $1,600 to $1,800, and they take that money and they spend it in the retail stores? What that does is it boosts everything up. The earnings of these companies go up. By the time all the refunds come in this year, it will be $152 billion that all of you are lending to Uncle Sam interest-free. You won't even lend your own money to your own uncle interest-free, but you'll lend it to Uncle Sam because when you get a refund, by the way, you don't get paid interest on that money for the whole year, so what are you doing? But besides that, because of the computers and the money came in sooner, a lot of these old economy stocks, these retail stocks, have already gotten in their money from you that they have counted on, and therefore don't be surprised to see earnings not be as good as they normally are in the second quarter because the refunds have already come in. I ask you all to be extremely careful. If you're going to be invested in the stock market, and let's say you had 100% of your money that you said, all right, I have $50,000 that I want to put in the stock market. I would not take that $50,000 and put it in the stock market at all. At most, I would take 50 or 60% of the money that you have allocated towards growth, and that money, if you want, can go in the stock market. So you could have 50 or 60% of what you have to invest in the stock market. You might want to take 20 or 25% of what you have and put it into individual bonds. Right now, we have a very interesting thing going on in our economy where we have what's called an inverted yield curve. What this means is that shorter-term bonds, such as 10-year bonds, are giving you a higher interest rate than 30-year bonds. Normally, in the bond market, the longer you go, the longer out you go in a maturity, the higher interest rate you normally get. Now we have had an inverted yield curve, which means the shorter you go, the higher interest rate you are getting. Normally, an inverted yield curve is followed by a recession. So you, again, all have to be very careful. So if you put 60% in the market and you have 25%, let's say, in bonds, you should not be going out now longer than 10 years in bonds. And in my opinion, you should only be buying individual bonds, not bond funds. Bond funds are probably one of the biggest ripoffs out there, in my opinion. So I ask you to all be seriously vigil in knowing the difference between the two, because many of your financial advisors are going to tell you, oh, you want to come out of the stock market and you want to be safe, let's go into a bond fund. Wrong. Bond funds don't have maturities. Bond funds have expense ratios. Bond funds go up and down in value, so you are never guaranteed to get out what you put in. And as interest rates go out or go up, the value of bond funds go down. If you buy an individual bond, they all have maturity dates. They all lock in the interest rate for you. And you are all guaranteed to get back what you put in, especially if you buy a treasury bill, bond, or note. Again, if I were you, I would not be going out longer than 10 years. Currently, municipal bonds are actually, in my opinion, a better buy than treasury bills, bonds, or notes. The Treasury currently has been instituting a buyback program for their 30-year bonds, driving the prices of them up and therefore the yields of them down. You can get a municipal bond right now, a California municipal bond, which means you do not have to pay taxes on it on the state or federal level, for very close to what you can get a Treasury, where you do have to pay taxes on it on the federal level. So I ask you to look at that. For those of you who are investing in the stock market and you have, let's say, that $50,000 or whatever amount you want to invest, I ask you not to invest it all in one lump sum, and you should use a technique called dollar cost averaging, where you take whatever sum of money you have, let's say it's $12,000, and you would divide that sum by 12, and you would take that figure, that $1,000 a month, and you would take that amount of money and every single month put that into the fund or the stock that you would want to buy. Do not take 100% of your money right now and throw it into the market. The markets are right now passing some very serious support levels. What is a support level? Simple. Think of yourself on a ladder. You're standing on this ladder. You have support under you. You fall off that ladder. Your next level of support is the ground. You bust through the ground, you're in trouble. That's what's happening with these markets. All of these markets have support levels. Recently, what's happened is we're busting through some of our support levels. The support level for the NASDAQ is 3,600. Again, the NASDAQ is where your technology stocks are quoted. If we bust through this 3,600 level, we could be in for a serious downside risk from that point. Today, it tested that level. It bounced off of it, but it didn't do it with the right kind of volume and the right kind of momentum. So again, I ask you all to be very, very careful. You should also look outside of the United States to be making investments in international funds, in European funds. Don't have 100% of your money invested here. So of the 50%, let's say, that you put in the stock market, in my opinion, 25% could go here in the United States, but 25% of that growth money should be invested overseas. Diversification is what you need to make sure that you are safe and sound. Now listen to me. The goal of your money is to make you feel secure, not to give you spielkes at night so you don't know what to do or where to go and you lose sleep. In my opinion, you will never be powerful in life until you are powerful over your own money, how you think about it, how you feel about it, and how you invest it. Many of you are counting on financial advisors right now to tell you what to do. And I have to tell you, if you have a great financial advisor, please keep them because they are worth their weight in gold. But most of them right now have never experienced a down market. They have 1,000 people a day calling them saying, what should I do? I'm losing money. I don't know what to do. You told me to buy this. They're losing their own money. Their phones are ringing off the hook. Every single broker who's sitting next to them is freaking out too. And you think they know what to tell you what to do? They don't. It is your money. What happens to it directly affects the quality of your life. Not my life, not your banker's life, not your financial advisor's life, but your life and those that you love. So today, right here and right now, I ask you all to start getting involved with your money, what to do with it and what not to do with it. Before I open up for questions here, the one main law of money that you all have to know is this: don't ever talk yourself into trusting anybody. If somebody calls you, if you call somebody for advice and it doesn't feel right, don't do it. It is better to do nothing than to do something that you don't understand, especially when these markets today, nobody can understand them. Something that you again should all think about when it comes to the technology areas, you know, when you come on the market as an IPO, millions of shares are issued to the employees. The employees, however, cannot sell those stocks or those shares for a number of months, anywhere from 4 to 6 months. That's known as the lockout period. After that lockout period is up, those people then, the employees, can option their stocks, sell it on the market. When that happens, and that's starting to happen now with many, many of the companies, hundreds of millions of shares are flooding the market of these technology companies that you all want to be buying. Right now in the United States, there is a $250 billion of margin debt, which means people like you have purchased stocks where they have borrowed money from the brokerage firms to do so. When you don't have the money and the stocks start to go down, the brokerages have to sell you out. The margin debt, the lockout periods being over, those are the things that are affecting this market, and you cannot fight it. It is reality. It's what's going on out there. Between diversification, between new economy, old economy, here in the United States, overseas, and a diverse portfolio of stocks, bonds, and 15% of your money in money market funds, you should be just fine over the long haul. Don't go for the short home run. Hit your money out of the ballpark so that it can carry you forever and a day, and you can each do that. What I'd like to do now is open it up for questions and see where we can go with all of this.
Thank you, Susie Orman, author of Courage to Be Rich, for your remarks here today. As you might imagine, we have a large number of questions, so let's begin. The first one comes in, the economy is doing great, or at least that's what I hear, but people are not saving. Should the government save us from ourselves?
No. Nobody can save you from yourself. You know, the government tried to do that back in the 30s with something called Social Security. Do most of you even know how Social Security works, truthfully? Do you all know that the Social Security laws have changed and that many of you in this room won't even be able to collect Social Security fully until you are 67 years of age? Do you know about the spousal benefits, the dependent benefits? Most of you don't even know that you, as a spouse or as a divorced spouse, that you can claim benefits if you've been married 10 years. So many of us don't even know about what we do have to take advantage of. Nobody can save us. And the truth is, you don't want anybody to save you. Because if you want somebody else to save you, what that's saying is that you don't think you are powerful enough to save yourself. And when you aren't powerful enough to save yourself, you feel powerless. And then the number two law of money kicks in. Power attracts money, and powerlessness repels it. When you feel powerless, you repel people because they don't want to be around you. They sense something is wrong. And it's people, my friends, that control money. They're the ones who give you the pay raises. They're the ones who hire you. They're the ones who fire you. So nobody, in my opinion, should save you when you have everything it takes to save yourself.
What should be a higher priority, paying off debt, for example, credit cards, lines of credit, car loans, or putting the max contribution into a non-matching 401k?
Yeah. In my opinion, you will never have financial freedom if you have credit card debt. Debt is bondage. And when you have bondage, you cannot have freedom. The problem in the United States is most of us have such shame, we don't want to tell one another that we have credit card debt. We all look like $1 million. We all have homes that are $1 million. We drive cars that are leased that look like $1 million. However, at 2 or 3 in the morning when we're up all by ourselves thinking, how am I going to pay the bills when they come in at the end of the month, we don't feel like $1 million. So we all need to start getting honest with one another and start telling people that we have credit card debt. Trust me, they're not going to dislike you when your friends say, let's go out to dinner, and you say, I can't. I have $10,000 of credit card debt. Let's eat at Taco Bell, which is my favorite place to eat, by the way, Yokiro Taco Bell. But anyway, and they'll say, oh, my God, I have $15,000. Thank you. However, in answering the question, which is, I always get in what I want to say somehow, is that if you have a 401k that does not match, in my opinion, it will depend on the interest rate of the credit card that you currently have. If it is above 9%, then you should absolutely not put money into a retirement account, whether it be a 401k, a Roth, or a traditional IRA, a SEP IRA, or a KEO, or a simple plan. You should take that money, every single penny, put it towards your credit card bill. Why? Because I can show you a very easy way without any risk whatsoever to earn above that 9 or 10% on your money. And especially in a market like today where we're down 10% on the NASDAQ, we're down 5% in the Dow, simply pay off your credit card bills. Credit card interest is not tax deductible. It doesn't do you any good whatsoever. When you have credit card debt, you render yourself powerless, and then the second law of money kicks in. Power attracts, it's true, but powerlessness repels it, and you are the exact people that need money to come your way. If you are in a 401k plan, however, that does match the contribution, and for those of you who don't know what that means, you put a dollar in, and your employer matches maybe 50 cents or a percentage of the amount of money that you put in, I advise you then to contribute up to the point of the match, stop contributing after you have reached that maximum point, and from that point on, every penny, in my opinion, should go to pay for your credit card debt.
The next question. My mutual fund has performed poorly since the day I bought it. Now it's worth less than when I purchased it. I want to cash it in, but don't want to lose any more money. Any suggestions?
Well, it would truthfully depend on what mutual fund you have and what technology, you know, what sector it's in. Is it in technology? Is it in financial? Is it an index fund? Whatever's going on with it. Most likely, if you have a gut feeling to cash it in, probably you should not. But no, very seriously, only in that when we have watched it and watched it and watched it. Usually what happens is that our emotions kick in. And when your emotions kick in to that degree, you usually, your timing is off. What you need to do is not make an emotional decision here. You need to make an intellectual decision here. I ask you, if you can, to go onto the internet. Look up Morningstar.com. Look up the actual mutual fund that you are in. And look at it compared, and they will do this for you on Morningstar.com. They will compare it for you with the other mutual funds that are comparable to yours. If all of them have gone down in that same sector, then you have to decide, should you keep or should you not? If yours, however, has gone down far more than the other funds in that same sector, then you need to get rid of it because it's truly a poor performing mutual fund. But when there's such emotion in the market right now and emotion in your own investments, use a little bit of intellectual research that's out there now to guide you in your decisions. However, bottom line is this. If it's really rendering you powerless, sell it. Because you know, you just have to bite the bullet then. Because if you're losing sleep over it, if it's making you feel less than, you become less than. Remember, there's many ways to earn money in this world. And one is not just investing in the market, but it's your occupation that you do. And if how you're investing is rendering you powerless, you go to work and you don't perform as well. So you want to be powerful in your life. So you're going to have to decide, do you bite the bullet or don't you? And again, before you do that, I just ask you to look up your mutual fund, look at comparisons of it, and then make an intellectual decision. Do you have a bad mutual fund or do you not? Or did you just happen to buy at the wrong time when these markets have gone down?
And if you do sell it, you never look at it again in the newspaper, right?
Well, it's actually, you know, I have to tell you, it's harder when you've sold something and it continues to go up. Then even if you sell something and it goes down, you see most of you right now are so freaked out. Maybe not because you've lost money, but because you've lost profit. And it's a fascinating thing. Here you buy a stock at 20 and it goes down to 15. And you don't feel so bad because all you've lost is what you put in. And you say to yourselves, but on paper, it's all right. It will come back one day. And emotionally, you're not that upset. You buy something at 20 and it goes to 150. And now it's here at 100. You feel sick to your stomach because you didn't take advantage of that $50 per share that you could have had. And the press tells me that emotions have nothing to do with money. Give me a break. Look at yourselves and look how you respond with money. So look at it intelligently. Are you up or are you down? Don't be greedy because you didn't get every penny out of it. You know, these days of 25% a year returns or 30% a year returns was just ludicrous. Remember when you used to be happy when you got 12? Go back to those days. There's nothing wrong with getting 11 or 12% a year on your money. You can become seriously rich getting 11 or 12% a year on your money. In fact, if you put $100 a month into a good mutual fund at the age of 25 and all you got was your 12%. Do you know at the age of 65, if you did that every single month, you'd have $1 million? That's at a 12% return, which all of you think is a horrible return. It's not. So the key, I just want to finish that one thought for a second. Time is the most important ingredient in a financial freedom recipe. For those of you who have children or grandchildren, now is the time for them to start investing in their future. If they started that mutual fund at the age of 25, yeah, they'd have $1 million. If they wait, however, just 10 years till they're 35, they think no big deal. 10 years, $100 a month, that's $1,200 a year, that's $12,000, no big deal. What difference would it make to me over those 10 years? If you started 35, by the time you're 65, you'd have only $300,000. Those 10 years cost them $700,000. So if you have children or grandchildren, start getting them to babysit. Open up Roth IRAs for them. Start investing for them now by letting them earn some money that can be put away in a Roth IRA, and they'll be multi-millionaires before you know it.
With a combined family income of approximately $150,000, we still can't afford to buy a decent home on the peninsula. In lieu of that, what kinds of investments would you recommend? And do you believe in paying a certified financial planner a percentage of what's earned in those investments?
Yeah, actually, there's all different kinds of financial advisors out there. There are stockbrokers. Have you ever wondered why they used to call stockbrokers? Maybe we made you broker in the long run. You never know. But anyway, they've now changed their names to financial advisors. But there are financial advisors who work for brokerage firms who you pay a commission to. They make money. Whether you lose money or you make money, they make money. Then there are certified financial planners that usually work for themselves or other financial planning firms that can be paid on a fee basis, which I happen to like a lot, and do not participate in whether you buy or sell anything according to their advice. And or there are certified financial planners that also will make a commission on what they sell you. Usually it's about 5%. Their favorite investments to sell you are loaded mutual funds and annuities. I have to tell you, I dislike annuities so much, I cannot even begin to tell you, especially variable annuities in your retirement plans. I think they are some of the biggest ripoffs out there. So if you happen to have a variable annuity in a retirement plan, you have a shyster for a financial advisor, in my opinion. How I'm very hard on them because I should be, because it's your money. And the goal of a financial advisor is to make sure that you are wealthy and that you have what you have earned. Not that they are making a living off of you. Another way a financial advisor can make money is usually called a registered investment advisor, where they get a percentage of money that's under management. So if you give them $100,000 and they get 1% a year, they make money. Let's say they'll make their $1,000. They take that $100,000 to $200,000. Now they're making 1% of $200,000. Now they're making $2,000 a year. They take that $100,000 down to $50,000. Now they're only making $500 a year. If they make you money, they make themselves money. They usually don't participate in the commissions as well. So I happen to love registered investment advisors that work on no commissions but a percentage of assets, or certified financial planners that are fee-based planners that tell you what to do and they are not attached to if you do it or not. In terms of buying the home at $150,000 a year on the peninsula, I can't help you there. Right? However, I can tell you this. You both qualify for a Roth IRA, because a Roth IRA is eligible for those of you who are married and have adjusted gross income of $150,000 a year or less, or as a single person, $95,000 a year or less for a full $2,000 a year contribution. That $2,000 goes down to zero once as an individual you're making over $110,000 a year, or as a joint couple over $160,000. If you open up a Roth IRA, it is one of the best investment vehicles, in my opinion, out there. And we'll see where it goes, but hopefully I'll have time to even tell you the difference between a Roth IRA and a traditional IRA and some very not well-known facts about Roth IRAs that I think you all should know, unless you want me to just tell them now.
Well, the next question was, what's so good about the Roth IRA? So let's go right there.
Now we know why she's a judge. Yes! Fair all the way along. Fabulous. Most of you are familiar with a traditional IRA where for years you've been able to put $2,000 a year, up to $2,000 a year of your earned income, you have to earn money to put it in, to a traditional IRA. If you did so, you got to take that $2,000 off your income taxes. If you were in the 20% tax bracket, it saved you $400 on your income taxes this year. For that $400 tax savings, however, your money is in the traditional IRA, but it has got to stay there until you are at least 59 and a half years of age. If you take it out prior to the age of 59 and a half in almost all circumstances, you would pay a 10% penalty tax on the amount of money you withdraw and ordinary income tax on it as well. In a traditional IRA, if you haven't needed your money, you have got to start taking money out of it by the time you are 70 and a half, and actually it's April 1st after the year you turn 70 and a half. If you don't take out the correct amount of money that you need to take out, the government will charge you a 50% penalty tax on the amount of money you should have taken out and you did not. Upon your death, and it passes to your beneficiaries, let's say your children, they have a specific number of years until they have to wipe the IRA clean, and they will pay ordinary income tax on it. A Roth IRA, if you meet those income qualifications, you can put up to $2,000 of earned income in it. However, you do not get to take it off your taxable income. So you do not get to keep that $400 that you normally would pay in taxes. If you are willing to give up that $400, this is how a Roth works. The $2,000 that you put in each year is known as your original contributions. You can take out your original contributions anytime you want, regardless of age, without any taxes or penalties. So here you are, 35 years of age, and you put $2,000 in this year, $2,000 next year, $2,000 the year after. You have $6,000 that you've put in there. It's now grown to $6,500, and your car breaks down, and you need money. And you go, okay, you can take out up to the $6,000, the original contributions that you put in, out of your Roth IRA. You're 38 years of age. In a traditional IRA, you'd be paying a 10% penalty. In a Roth, you do not. You get to take out your original contributions without any taxes or penalties whatsoever. It's the $500 or the earnings on your money that have got to stay in there until you're 59 and a half and or 5 years. If you leave your money in there and it meets that qualification of 5 years, you can take any of your money out at the age of 59 and a half tax-free. At 70 and a half, you don't have to take a penny out if you don't want to. If you die with your money in a Roth IRA and you pass it down to your kids, they can take it out tax-free. They'll love you forever. So, in my opinion, a Roth IRA clears up the fear that many of you have about putting money in a retirement account because you're afraid if you do and you need money, you won't be able to get it. It also converts taxable income later on in life when, in my opinion, you should be in a higher tax bracket to tax-free income that you will need sooner than later. That's the difference.
Okay, we've got a couple of questions about brokers, so let's put them together. How do I know if my broker is doing a good job? He seems to have given me bad advice, but isn't that normal? And when should my broker phone me to alert me there is a problem with one of my investments?
Right away. Absolutely right away. The job of your financial advisor is not only, seriously, to tell you what to do with your money, but if they're making a commission off of you, it is also to make you feel okay about what is happening to your money, to watch it for you, and to be the first one to inform you that something is not going right. If they aren't doing that, it's simply because they're a chicken, you know, they're chicken. Because it's very hard to call somebody and say, I made a mistake. You know, financial advisors don't want to lose your money. They really don't. They have such wonderful egos that they want to be able to go to those cocktail parties with you and say, I made him $50,000 last week on a $5,000 investment. He doesn't want to say, but however, the week before that, we lost $200,000 on a $500,000 investment. So they need to be very, very attentive. Here's the scoop. If you're paying money to a financial advisor to pick the mutual funds for you, to tell you what stocks to buy and when to sell, they should be able to do better for you, in my opinion, by at least 3 to 5% a year than the Standard & Poor's 500 index. Because if they cannot do better than an index such as the Standard & Poor's 500 index, which is 500 of the largest stocks out there, then you might as well get rid of them and simply buy the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund or the Vanguard Standard & Poor's 500 index fund without costing you anything, and you would make more. So if you have somebody working for you, you're paying them, whether it's through a fee or commission, they better be able to outperform the stock market for you, or you don't need them. Did that make sense? So how do you know? Figure out your annual returns. Have they made you money or have they not? In fact, if they were a good financial advisor, they would be giving you every single quarter how much money they have actually made for you, lost for you, and on an annual basis, and show you how much money they've made off of you. They would then, right on that statement, compare your returns to the indexes so that you know if you are doing better or not. If they're not doing this, you have to wonder why not. Therefore, figure out your returns yourself. Go on to Morningstar.com, look up any of the index funds, and you'll see the returns of the markets, and you'll know if you've been doing better or not, and then you'll know what to do.
Any advice for our investment club? We're rich broads in training. That's what it says. So we already have optimism and Cisco.
Oh, well, if you have Cisco, yes, so do I. Right. You know, there are many, many fabulous ways to invest. And as usually as an investment club, which I happen to love, for those of you who want to start an investment club, there's a place where you can write for them called the NAIC, the National Association of Investment Clubs. For $25, you can join. And then they send you all the information back as to how to form a club, what are the documents, what do you need to know, and the guidelines you should follow. And it's something you might all want to think about. In investment clubs, however, most of you buy individual stocks rather than mutual funds. So all I can tell you is little by little, a fortune can be built. Make sure that you have diversification. Make sure that besides stocks like Cisco, you have stocks like Enron, which is a utility company that gives a great yield that also is giving great potential. There are a variety of technology stocks. There are a variety of stocks all over the board right now that are magnificent. But make sure that you have diversification and what you want to know, okay, and where you want to look at. So all I can tell you is keep going for it, because little by little, every fortune started with a sea of zeros. And soon that sea of zeros, truthfully, can come an ocean of millions and millions of dollars.
With an aging population, what do you think of pharmaceuticals, an assortment of them, as an investment strategy?
I happen to love them. I mean, it's a very well-known fact that once you turn 73 years of age and older, you take an average of 17 prescription drugs a year. Did you know that? It's true. And with the 76 million baby boomers that are getting older and older, I happen to think healthcare industry and pharmaceuticals are a fabulous place to be investing. However, I would not have more than 19% of my portfolio in pharmaceuticals. Just because you think you've latched on to the best thing out there, you may have, but what you're seeing happen in the stock markets today, the sectors are rotating. Financials are up one day, they're down significantly the next. Healthcare is up one day, it's down significantly the next. You have got to have all the sectors within your portfolio covered. If you want to get a good idea of how to do that, the Standard & Poor's 500 index funds have good sector breakdowns that you might want to kind of duplicate. I love pharmaceuticals. I love Bristol-Myers. If I had to name, you know, one company in there, it might be Bristol-Myers, just so you know. But it's something you should make sure that you're diversified with and that you know what you're doing. Remember, variety is the spice of life, even when it comes to the stock market.
If self-employed, that is no health insurance, should you buy state disability insurance or put money somewhere else to grow?
Well, I would never, ever, you know, think about putting it in state disability as a growth vehicle. I would think about it, however, as a protective vehicle. What you would have to decide, are you better off buying private disability insurance and covering yourself that way and making sure that you're okay? As a self-employed person, however, you do have opportunities out there known as a SEP IRA, which this year you're allowed to put up to a maximum of $25,500 into a SEP, or a KEO plan, which you're allowed to put up to $30,000 in. Those are both retirement vehicles that the self-employed are allowed to have. You can have a Roth IRA and those. By the way, if you have a 401k plan, you can also have a Roth if you meet the income qualification, so look into that. So as a self-employed person, besides just protecting yourself against disability, you need to start saving for your future so you don't become financially disabled as you get older.
How do I take money out of the market and put it into bonds? What happens tax-wise?
So you have to know that tax-wise, you have got to have held an asset for longer than 12 months, 12 months and one day for it to be a long-term capital gain. Otherwise, it is a short-term gain and taxed to you as ordinary income. Long-term gains are taxed at 20%. So you figure out your tax consequences. You simply sell, put the money aside of what you're going to owe for taxes, and then you would invest in the bond market, and that's where we are.
All right, one last question. What's the worst financial mistake you've personally made, and what lesson from it can you impart to us?
Boy, selling Microsoft when I was a stockbroker in 1980, right, and thinking that just because I quadrupled my money, I did well. If you hold on for the long run, a good stock, don't settle for a quadruple or 10 times your money. You can make a fortune, grow with the companies you invest, and let them grow with you as well. And don't be afraid that you're going to lose out, because if you sell and go somewhere else, you might not have put that money to a better place. Do I wish I still had Microsoft today? You betcha I do.
Our thanks to Susie Orman, certified financial planner. And author of The Courage to Be Rich and 9 Steps to Financial Freedom. I'd also like to thank our audience at the Walnut Creek Marriott and those listening on radio. Now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California and the Lafayette Bookstore is adjourned.